Welcome back. My first guest, as always, is the great Luke Jones, doing great things up there in from parts unknown, right? How many people, parts unknown is that must be a very populous region because we've heard that term before. But Luke, I was just in at the Camden Yards Tuesday night after witnessing eight straight Orioles losses and my friends telling me not to go anymore. They won, but then they come back Wednesday and lay an egg.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you're gonna lose some ball games. They won a series. They finish up a 6-3 homestand. I'm glad you got to see a victory, though. I know
I
you've
did.
become more and more passionate and enthusiastic about this product this year and what
I
the
have.
Orioles are doing. So glad to see you got a win before they head back out to the West Coast for another long road trip.
No question about it, Luke. It was a lot of fun, a lot of excitement at the yard these days. It's great to see these young guys play. I'm not sure they realize or they recognize what they're doing and their achievements, but it's getting tight up the top. Tampa Bay's playing good ball as well. It looks like it's going to come down to the wire.
Yeah, it really does. No question about it. I mean, for as much as the Rays struggled in the month of July and the Orioles got to a point where they were able to shrink that deficit and take over first place right around, what was it, July 19th, July 20th, something like that. And the Orioles have been in first place ever since. The Rays are playing really good baseball. And I think this, what you just said is exactly right, that both these teams, you're kind of waiting for one or the other to blink. And I think for the Orioles, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the devastating loss of Felix Bautista to a UCL injury. We don't know officially how long he's going to be out, whether he's going to require Tommy John surgery, which would not just take him out for the rest of this year, but also next year. But it's a big loss. And it doesn't mean they're not going to make the playoffs. It doesn't mean they can't make a run in October, but it certainly changes the makeup of the bullpen. I think it changes the makeup of the entire pitching staff for that matter, because that's how huge Felix Bautista was. But as Mike Elias said when he announced information on the injury to Bautista last weekend, he pointed out that the Orioles aren't the only team in the AL East that's dealt with an injury like that. I mean, look at the Rays, the number of pitching injuries they've had, number of guys having Tommy John surgery. They just lost Shane McClanahan not that long ago, a couple weeks ago when that news came out. So unfortunately for pitching, that's the nature of the game. These guys break. And you look at someone like Bautista, even at 6'8", 285 pounds as he's listed, you watch him pitch and you just kind of think to yourself, the human arm wasn't meant to throw 102 miles per hour. And unfortunately, as much as I love watching these various pitchers, especially in today's day and age where they throw so hard, this is part of it. And this is why you need to have quality pitching depth in your organization. So we'll see how it's going to play out. Certainly, Yennier Cano has stepped into the closer's role thus far. I think you'll see some other guys get some opportunities, depending on the matchup, depending on that night, whoever they're playing. But this is a time for a DL Hall to step up. Tyler Wells is going to be back in that bullpen at some point. We've talked about Fujinami. We've talked about Danny Coulomb, different guys, CNL Perez, guys that have either been in the bullpen all year or some guys that are going to get some opportunities here in the month of September. And we'll see if they're ready to handle it. It's not going to be one guy that replaces Felix Bautista, but if you have a collective group, if you have multiple guys that are able to step up and offer you just a little bit more, that's how you're able to survive something like this. That's how you're able to endure, and that's how you're able to keep yourself in position to not make the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs. That's not really in question anymore. But in terms of trying to win the division, in terms of trying to get that number one seed, which would give you a bye through the wild card round, they're going to have to get a number of guys to step up, because even the best case scenario on Bautista, which I don't even know what that would be at this point. I mean, avoiding Tommy John surgery, I still don't know if that means he's going to pitch the rest of this year, and certainly wouldn't know if he'd be the same Felix Bautista that we've come to know. So I think you have to, at this point, prepare as though you're not going to see him, and you move forward. And if it ends up being a little bit better than they thought, if the news is better than they thought, then great. But I think at this point, you have to be preparing to not have him the rest of the year. We'll cross that bridge when we get there, if it is indeed Tommy John surgery. But Certainly, the Orioles still have so much to play for and so much to be excited about, even with this bout of very disappointing news over the weekend.
Yeah, that's very true, Luke. I tell you, one guy I'm enjoying watching is Anthony Santander. I think he's hitting the ball real well. He's seeing the ball well, and man, oh man, he's fun to watch.
He is. He's going to be disappointed that the White Sox left town and the Orioles are heading out west, because he had a phenomenal series against Chicago. And, it wasn't that long ago he was dealing with a bad back. So I even saw him after a game earlier in the homestand where he really, he had, I don't know if it was Bengay or what it was, all over his back. I mean, you could tell he was really struggling physically. So they gave him a few days. He's back to hitting the ball and hitting it well. And certainly, I mean, I think he's probably not a guy that's going to be around for the long haul. You know, when you just look at where he is age-wise, where he is in terms of arbitration, considering the number of young outfielders the Orioles have in their system. But he's such a great story in the sense that this was a Rule 5 pick back in 2017. So he was around for the end of the Buck Showalter, Dan Duquette era. And you look at how he profiled then, he always had some pop in the bat. There was never a question about that. But the big question for me, and it's not unique to what we've talked about with Ryan Mountcastle until recently, with Mountcastle having hit so well and performed so well since the All-Star break. But he was always a guy that was just a free swinger, wouldn't draw walks. Up until a couple years ago, had a career 290 on base percentage. I mean, just was a free swinger, and was the kind of guy that when he's swinging the bat really well, you like him. Otherwise, he's not doing a whole lot to help you. And he's really, at the major league level, improved his plate discipline, improved his swing decisions. He's now someone that has an ability to draw walks. I mean, he had a home run the other night. What was it, on an 11 pitch at bat, I think it was. He puts together good at bats, and he has a plan up there, and he has a much better idea of the strike zone than he did 3, 4, 5 years ago. So it really is a compliment to him. And it's funny because, we're not talking about someone who's 35 years old. I mean, he's in his late 20s, but you view him as one of the elder statesmen on this club, and certainly on the offensive side of things. So he's been a big part of what they've done for a few years now. And again, what happens in the future with him and what happens this offseason, and where the Orioles might decide to go in the outfield just in general remains to be seen. But Anthony Santander, he's been huge for them of late, and really he's been one of their best players over the last few years. And the improvement he's made at the major league level, which, by the way, Dennis, is unique. That's not something from an on-base ability standpoint. That's typically not a skill you see guys improve on dramatically at the major league level. But he's been able to do that, and it's a real credit to his work ethic and his abilities.
Luke, what about the Orioles' six-man rotation, right? That's a bit atypical, is it not? And it seemed like it's working very well for them.
It is. I mean, it's something that ideally you don't really like it from the standpoint of, you have, a lot of teams struggle to have five quality starters. So then you're throwing a sixth into the conversation. So that's why you don't see it too often. But from a standpoint of where the Orioles stand with Grayson Rodriguez, Kyle Bradish, Dean Kramer, and let's even mention Tyler Wells, who of course went to the minors, is going to come back as a reliever, but innings were a concern for him. All of these individuals have either already set career highs in innings, or they're blowing past it. They're going to finish the year well beyond of what their career high was. So you get into a position where you say, all right, how much is too much in that regard? And, we just spent a couple minutes talking about Felix Bautista. We know pitcher health is a major concern, and you're always trying to do what's best for the player. You're trying to do what's best for your club. But in the Orioles case, you certainly don't want to be in a position where you're shutting any of these guys down just because, well, they pitched too many innings. We'll shut them down and that's that. Of course they're not going to do that. They're going to be playing in October. So the six-man rotation was something that they decided to do, that it spaces out. There's an extra day in between their start, so you get them a little extra rest. If you play it out, and they've done it since what, early August, you play it out over the course of a couple months, it adds up to fewer starts for each individual. So it keeps your workload in check a little bit more. So I think you look at how Grayson Rodriguez has pitched. You look at how Bradish has pitched. I think it's been really good for Dean Kramer, who has pitched really, really well, has pitched at a high level. We can debate, is there some negative to that? I mean, on the flip side, Kyle Gibson, who is a veteran and, doesn't have any workload concerns, but extra day in between his starts, August was his worst month of the season. So, now let's be clear. Kyle Gibson is what he is. He's a kind of a career, sub five, high four ERA kind of starting pitcher. And the Orioles knew that when they got him. So, I don't think necessarily it's all about the six man rotation, but you do wonder about that. But I think what's interesting for the Orioles now, as we get into September, is what is that? And we're going to start thinking more and more about what their postseason starting rotation is going to look like. If you're talking about a short series, like the wild card round, for example, or it's only three games anyway, so three guys. But you get into the divisional round, you get into the ALCS, you get into the World Series, you're talking about a four-man rotation. To me right now, if you ask me what my postseason rotation is, Kyle Bradish, Grayson Rodriguez. I'm feeling really good about Dean Kramer. After that, that fourth spot for me is wide open right now. I think some people would tend to say Kyle Gibson because of the experience factor, but I'm willing to use that as a tiebreaker, but I'm not willing to just give him a spot if he's not pitching well. Jack Flaherty, who we know they got at the trade deadline, that's been he's been a disappointment. So we're going to have to see. He's going to have to pitch well over the final month to be on the postseason roster, let alone talking about the rotation. Cole Irvin might be your fourth starter right now in the postseason because he's pitched pretty well. But I'm going to throw out the name that I think everyone's been waiting to kind of hear about and see what happens. John Means is very close at this point to coming back and being activated from the IL. He's gone through a minor league rehab assignment. He threw, I think it was right around 75 pitches in his last start. We're going to see him in September. I caution everyone, temper your expectations. You're talking about someone coming back from Tommy John surgery last year. John Means has never pitched in a competitive environment like what the Orioles find themselves in now. I mean, keep in mind, he last pitched for the Orioles in April of last season, when the Orioles, everyone just assumed they were still really bad, right? Even though they ended up being pretty good over the course of the second half of last season. So there's the physical element to it. There's the element of these games having much more riding on them, much more stress, much more just the stakes being higher. But when you consider where the rotation is right now with Gibson and Flaherty struggling, Cole Irvin not being a guarantee of anything, even though he's pitched well to his credit, and the other three guys all being younger guys that you're trying to manage their workload, John Means is going to have every opportunity to show what he can do at this point in time in September of 2023. And I'm not going to sit here and guarantee or assume he's going to pitch well enough to put himself at, in that conversation, but it's not an incredibly high bar for him to clear to think that it's not possible that he could be part of their postseason plans in terms of whether it's as a starter, whether it's maybe coming out of the bullpen and giving them some innings in that regard. So, for me, I'm going to be watching him very closely. I assume we're going to see him. Might have a little more, one more start to go in the minors. I haven't heard officially one way or the other on that, but we're going to see him. And when you have a couple guys struggling in a six-man rotation, to go back to your original question, let's see what John Means can do. And boy, if he can be anything close to what he was pre-Tommy John surgery, that's a really nice piece to add to your starting rotation and to your pitching staff. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing what John Means can do. Of course, coming back from Tommy John surgery, as he's 16 months removed from that. So very much rooting for him. And I know the organization's excited to see where he is.
Now, they're exciting times at Camden Yards for sure, Luke. Not only did I go Tuesday, I also went Sunday. So I've been to about 10 games this year, which is the most I've ever been to. And the enthusiasm is there. I know that jersey sales are through the roof. That City Connect jersey, you can't find that anywhere. So things are trending very, very well for the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, everything on the field is great. You know, and then we talk about ownership and the lease and those.
We'll leave it at that. We'll
Yeah,
leave
and that's fine. Right,
Baltimore
right.
positive. Right.
Right. And I'm not trying to belabor that point, but
I
it
know.
really just shows it shows the contrast in how great things are on the field, yet off the
Oh.
field, you're kind of like, oh wow, if you can just get some of that positive mojo on the field to talk about ownership or the lease or extending some of these young players, I mean you'd feel so much better about things, but it has been so much fun on the field, and it's such a credit to Mike Elias and baseball operations at the front office. It's a credit to Brandon Hyde and his coaching staff, and it's especially a credit to these young players. I mean, it's just they've been so fun to watch. I mean, you're
Fun to
talking
watch.
about a team that's already clinched a winning season. You know, they're 33 games over 500 as they begin this West Coast trip. You know, they go to Arizona. Diamondbacks have a lot to play for, so it'll be a big series of over the weekend, and then at the Angels have completely fallen apart. Shohei Ohtani, elbow injury himself, as we were talking about Felix Bautista a little bit ago, and then you go to Boston for the final leg of it. But you know, before too long, they'll be coming back. They'll have a quick series with St. Louis, and then they have a four-game set with Tampa Bay in mid-September that is just going to be enormous. So,
I
you
have
know,
my
we're so, we're a couple weeks.
tickets. I have my tickets already for that series.
Absolutely. Now that Friday night game, Adam Jones is going to retire as an Oriole,
Oh
and I mean,
my.
you have a big four-game set in mid-September. So, while there's plenty of excitement, I'm sure you and I will get to the Ravens here in a moment, but plenty of excitement for that September 10th opener. But wow, just a few days after that, the Rays come to town. And the way this race has gone, where it, you know, the Orioles have been up a game, two games, as much as three games, but you know, just based on how this is going to go, barring something really strange from the Orioles or the Rays, that series is just going to be absolutely enormous as it pertains to deciding the AL East division championship.
Yeah, I have tickets for the Thursday game, which I think is the 14th. I'm going to miss Adams's induction, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And with that, let's segue to the Baltimore Ravens. They've been very busy with the rounding out the roster. You had the cuts, some surprises in there, some not surprising things. But now, Luke, that the teams can carry up to 16 players in their practice squad and carry 53, you're talking 69 players. That's a lot of players to juggle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, this was a very, as it pertains to drama, as it pertains to surprises, very underwhelming, right? I mean, I think other than probably Malik Ham, you know, the Baltimore kid, which is a great story making the team as an undrafted free agent, although I think there's a decent chance we could see him on IR, you know, at least early in the season. You know, he's been dealing with an injury and they're going to need the roster spots, you know, as they try to get, you know, Brent Urban back on the roster, Kevon Seymour back on the roster. Sounds like they want Josh Johnson back on the roster because we know Huntley's dealing with a hamstring right now. But other than that, if you had told me, Dennis, back on July 28th that this would be the 53-man roster, I would have said, okay. I would have said, I'm not really surprised by that. You know, Keaton Mitchell, I think, was the guy that we said all along of the rookie free agents that probably had the best chance to make the 53-man roster. And he's banged up too. There's probably a decent chance he lands on IR to start the season as he's dealing with a shoulder injury that, you know, has sidelined him for a week or two now. But you know, it's been about what we expected. And that's why I always caution, you know, throughout training camp, I say, look, the observations are great. I do my 12 Ravens thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com. I have a lot of fun with that. But I always want readers and listeners to understand that what happens in the day-to-day over the course of the summer typically isn't that consequential beyond just the preparation they're putting in to play games that matter. So, yeah, there's always someone that will come and surprise. I mean, I mentioned the rookie free agents. If there's one guy, and you know, I said this, you know, I'd left this out. There's one guy who did really change his fortunes this summer to me. It was Ardarius Washington, who played so well. He was someone who benefited from some of the other injuries at corner, where he played so well at the nickel that, you know, I'm thinking he's, you know, he's going to get first crack at that nickel spot. You know, I think they're going to mix and match a little bit. I think it will depend on matchups because he is 5'8", 178 pounds or whatever he is. So, you know, if you have a team that uses their tight end like the Ravens use Mark Andrews in the slot, you know, I don't think you're going to see Ardarius Washington matching up with a player like that, but he is someone who entered training camp certainly as a guy you viewed as being on the bubble, and by the end of summer, No, he was a roster lock with the way that he played. So, but at the same time, he's got to carry it over to the regular season. You know, we've seen guys that play so well over the summer, then they get to the regular season and doesn't translate. Or on the flip side, some guys who didn't play so well during the preseason and they turned it on once, you know, they get to the regular season. And you're hoping David Ajabo could be someone like that, because let's face it, Ajabo, very underwhelming summer. I mean, he played into the third quarter against the Buccaneers in that last preseason game, and that's not a sign of someone that you're overly high on if you're having him play there. So, not to say that you're burying him or that he's a bust or anything like that, but you would like to have seen more from him, especially at the times where he was going up against backups and, you know, guys, second and third team guys. So, but again, you go back to summer is about preparing for the regular season. They're getting ready now to kick it off for real. You know, as you and I talk next week, we'll be eyeball deep talking about the Houston Texans and CJ Stroud and everything that you know, that goes with a week one season opener. But I think yeah, as it pertains to the roster right now, you just said it. It's not just the 53. You got a 16-man practice squad. I think as it stood just a day or two after roster cuts, 15 of those 16 spots were devoted to guys that were with the team in the summer. So, you know, it really gets to a point where, you know, who are you really missing out on? You know, Caillou Kelly, they cut, you know, their fifth round rookie, which, you know, I think people were surprised or disappointed about just because the state of the cornerback position. But I remember you and I talking a couple weeks ago, the fact that Caillou Kelly didn't play until deep into the first preseason game. You saw some of the other corners that were on the field before him, you know, guys that didn't make the team, mind you. It was a sign that, you know, he wasn't impressing the coaching staff. Now, maybe he'll go to Seattle and maybe that'll be one that got away for the Ravens. But, you know, they clearly thought he was a guy that they could sneak through waivers and try to get on the practice squad. It didn't work out. You know, at the end of the day, most of those scenarios, most of those players we talk about every year, very few ever amount to anything. I mean, here's a perfect example. At this time last year, people were talking about the Ravens letting go of Isaiah Mack, you know, the
Right.
defensive lineman. He's been with a few other teams since then. You know, he certainly hasn't made his mark somewhere else. And that's not a knock on him. It's just a reminder of how this process really works. So many guys that you're afraid of losing on waivers. One, most guys, you know, there aren't that many waiver claims typically when you look around the league. And even if you lose someone, more often than not, yes, I understand people will throw out, hey, what about James Harrison? He was a Raven and look what he ended up being for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'll give you that one. But for every James Harrison, there are probably a couple dozen guys you can point to and say, it really didn't matter in the big picture. So, you know, where the roster stands right now, it's going to change between now and week one, at least a little bit. And we know it will certainly change plenty over the course of a season because of injuries, attrition, guys being effective or not, other players becoming available elsewhere that you want to bring into your program. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But overall, not anything earth-shattering, certainly nothing that was stunning to me from a roster cut standpoint.
Coach Harbaugh announced that John Simpson locked down the left guard spot, and there was speaking about the offensive line, there was some speculation about Ben Cleveland's status. He played some tackle, though. I guess he played relatively well, except the one play where he got posterized by the Eagles' number one draft pick. But that aside, he showed some versatility, and the Ravens don't have a history of moving too quickly, particularly from third round draft picks. Fifth round draft picks, like Kelly, okay. But with Ben, it looks like he's going to be part of the team in the future.
Yeah, it sure looks that way. And I'll tell you why I really think he ultimately made it. One, what you just said. I mean, he had the posterized, the victimized video that went viral on Twitter and everything, well, on the really bad rep. But overall, he didn't play that poorly in the preseason. But I think this really comes down to this, Dennis. You just mentioned John Simpson winning the left guard spot. Well, who did he win it over? Big Sala, the sixth round rookie. If anyone watched Big Sala the last couple of weeks, really struggled,
That really was.
really struggled. I mean, it was kind of a nightmare. Like it was kind of
Yeah.
disaster struggle against Tampa Bay in that last preseason game. So they like him, but I said it to a couple, you know, a couple other reporters. if you didn't know anything about Big Sala, whether he was a draft pick or that he began camp as the starting left guard, if you just saw his performance against the Bucks, you would probably say he doesn't belong on the 53-man
Yeah.
roster. That's how bad it was. So I think where this really stems is, Ben Cleveland, he had a perfectly fine summer. He wasn't great. He wasn't bad either. I think he was, kind of what we've seen from Ben Cleveland over his first couple years, some good and some not so good. One thing that John Harbaugh did talk about this week that I will give credit to Cleveland for is he stayed on the practice field. The last couple of years, he had had nagging injuries that kept him off, on and off the practice field. And Harbaugh's talked about it a lot, especially with offensive linemen, that time on task that you need to really develop as a player.
Sure.
So he stayed on the field, but I really think this came down to, okay, you have John Simpson at left guard, you have Kevin Zeitler at right guard. If something happens to one of those guys, I'm not sure they saw enough from Sala to say that he's going to be their primary backup at guard. Whereas I think with Ben Cleveland, even if he hasn't blossomed into the starting caliber player that they envisioned when they drafted him 2 years ago, I think they saw good enough performance to say, I think we want him as our primary backup at guard. Because you kind of look at it, their swing tackle, they have Patrick McCary, and obviously they have Falele, probably more so for the right side, if something happens to Morgan Moses. Center, they have McCary who can play center on game day. They got Sam Mustipher back to the practice squad, and they can obviously use him if something happens to Linderbaum where he misses a couple weeks. But at guard, Patrick McCary has played there a little bit before, but he's not really what you're looking for in terms of size and what his best fit is. So I think it was a case where they just Sala struggled so much over the last couple games in the preseason. Ben Cleveland played better, and I think they still like Sala for the long term. I think they still feel he can blossom into a starting caliber player eventually, but you still need depth. You need quality depth on your roster. So I think that's probably the biggest reason why Ben Cleveland stuck around. But to your point, again, the one highlight play that was a low light for him aside, he had a pretty solid summer overall, and I think a big part of that was he finally showed some durability, some ability to stay on the practice field, which allowed him to make some gains over the course of the summer.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Big body guy, so hopefully he figures it out. We have seen, especially with Joe Dallesandres, the offensive line coach, we've seen some of these linemen take some time to develop. Ben Powers, the most recent example, who parlayed a real solid season into a phenomenal contract with the Denver Broncos, right? So sometimes it takes a minute for the young guys for it all to come together, physically, psychologically, emotionally, the whole nine yards.
No question about it. I mean, Ben Powers is the perfect example of that. I mean, you look at Ben Powers 2 years into his career, were we viewing him more, in a better light than Ben Cleveland? Yeah, I think so, but probably not much better. Certainly, after his first couple of years, you wouldn't have anticipated him getting the deal that he got from the Denver Broncos, which I think the Broncos overpaid for Ben Powers, but hey, he played really well last year, and give him credit. He earned a big payday, whether it's going to be with the Ravens or someone else. So you're right about that. And here's the other reality, Dennis, and you see this, and there was a lot of chatter about this. Offensive line play around the league is just not very good, and it's not very deep. So if you have a guy, as the Ravens do with Ben Cleveland, and believe me, there has been so much frustration with him. He even has a reputation for a guy who has played better in games than he has in practice. But again, nagging injuries, inconsistent play. I think that the expectations, they were really, if you recall, they were really excited about getting Ben Cleveland in the third round 2 years ago.
They
So
were.
how much of it was that compared to if it was just, a detached look at, oh, he's the highest player on our board, we'll take him. If you have that kind of a mindset with him, maybe you wouldn't be quite as disappointed in how he's performed to this point. But sometimes it does take a couple years. I mean, that's absolutely the truth. I mean, look at Bradley Bozeman. Matt Skura was a guy that, was undrafted and ended up, before he had the really bad knee injury, he was a solid starter for the Ravens for a year or two. I mean, so Joe Dallesandres does have a lot of success stories. I mean, yeah, when you have a Ronnie Stanley at left tackle, or you sign a Kevin Zeitler or a Morgan Moses, Joe D doesn't have a whole lot of coaching up to do there, other than just, some tweaks here and there. But when you are talking about some of these linemen, whether you're talking about a day two guy, a day three guy, or an undrafted, you know, an undrafted rookie, as the Ravens have, you know, look like a Tristan Colon, for example, you know, who ultimately developed into a solid backup player for a couple years. You know, it takes some time, and you got to develop these guys. So, you know, it, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But again, I do think the Ben Cleveland decision probably was more about how, you know, their sixth round rookie struggled so dramatically, more so than Ben Cleveland knocking their socks off. But I do think he had a solid summer, and I think they felt that something happens to Simpson or to Kevin Zeitler, at least right now. Now, week six or week 13, that could be a different story. But at least right now, you probably see Ben Cleveland going in there before you'd see Big Sala.
Yeah, and Sam Mustafa, the Bear fans, I like Bears fans because they're very honest. They're very upset when they lost Roquan Smith, but they weren't upset when they lost Mustafa. And I'm not saying it disrespectfully. They just said he's just not a great player. So that aside, how about Ozzie Newsome's last pick, right? Zach Sealer got an extension from the Dolphins, $38 million, 20 of it guaranteed for 3 years. Happy for the young man. Also happy for Ozzie Newsome.
No question about it. I mean, it just speaks to how remarkable that 2018 draft class was. And it's still wild to think that Hayden Hurst was the first guy they drafted that year. And that's the pick that you look at and say, well, that didn't really work out. And Hayden Hurst is what, on his third, he'll be on what, his fourth different team this year, I think. Fourth or fifth. I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
He's a solid player. He's a good player. He's not great.
Yeah,
he's
I mean,
good.
He's fine. He's fine. But the point is,
he did not play his draft position, that's for sure.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing. You look at the rest of that draft class, and it's just like, wow. You know, right. it really is impressive.
It was a wild class, it really was.
Yeah, so I'm sure Ozzie Newsome, you know, saw that Zach Sealer got that deal, and you know, probably had a smile and said, good. You know, that's
good for him.
And it's one of those deals, and this is where I'll even go back to Caillou Kelly, you know, because the Ravens cut him. And look, is it a great look for Eric DaCosta that, considering the need at cornerback and the current state of the cornerback position, it's not a great look that Caillou Kelly couldn't make the team. Let's call a spade. It's okay to say that. You know, it's okay to utter a little bit of criticism, but it does speak to, when you talk about someone like a Sealer, that sometimes you just don't have room for everyone. That's why I think I said this to you last week, talking about Travis Vokolek, you know, and a lot of Ravens fans were worried about him getting snatched up somewhere else, and he cleared waivers and made it to the practice squad. But, you know, I think the point that I made was, but you know what? He doesn't have a path to playing time here. There's Mark Andrews, there's Isaiah Likely, there's Charlie Kohler, and you got all these wide receivers that, you know, the Ravens have a better wide receiver room. So in the case of someone like him, if he gets a job on a 53-man roster, good, you know, like that's good for him. You know, you don't need to hoard players. Like, you want to have enough depth, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, if a guy has a better opportunity elsewhere, who are the Ravens or who are Ravens fans to say that, you know, that he doesn't deserve that shot elsewhere? You know, if he's sure. just going to be sitting on the practice squad, you know, so that's where if Caillou Kelly, look, he helps out Seattle, or okay. You know what else could happen, because this has happened as well, Dennis. He could end up getting cut in a week or two, and he could wind up back on the Ravens practice squad. That could happen as well. So,
or we have Darius Rush, the Colts' fifth round draft pick out of South Carolina. He got cut. So let's bring Darius over here to see if he's a better fit with the Ravens. It's all about fit sometimes, right? Comfort, the coaching staff, how a player feels. Sometimes guys perform better or worse or differently in different circumstances.
Yeah, no question about it. So, you know, I think just one thing that I would say, you know, just about the cornerback position, it is a little disappointing that, you know, Caillou Kelly didn't make it. And I would also say, because you look at where the cornerback position is right now for the Ravens, I mean, every single guy they have in that room has a question mark right now, whether you're talking about health questions for Rock Ya-Sin or Ronald Darby, whether you're talking about questions, you know, Kevon Seymour, like, he had a nice summer, and, you know, is that going to translate? Brandon Stevens, you know, is he ready to, you know, be a starter for them potentially if he needs to be here early in the season? You know, in the case of Ardarius Washington, does it carry over? Jalen Armour Davis can't stay on the field and hasn't been all that great when he's been on the field. You know, you go down the list, you know, Pepe Williams can't stay healthy, going to be on IR to start the year. You go down the list, there's a lot of question marks, and that's where you do look at the recent draft history. Basically, since drafting Marlon Humphrey, which, by the way, was 6 years ago now at this point in time, that wasn't that recent. Since then, their track record with corners hasn't been great. Now, I'll say this, it's not as though they've drafted corners in the first or second round, so some of that is you get what you pay for, in terms of where you're drafting these guys. But it would have been nice out of, you go down the list of Anthony Averett, Amon Marshall, Jalen Armour Davis, Damarian Williams, Caillou Kelly, Brandon Stevens, the jury's still out on. He's at least to me proven to be, some solid depth, even if no better than that. But the point is not a whole lot of hits in that group that I just mentioned to this point, and that's where the Ravens kind of find themselves right now. You're kind of holding your breath at that position, at least until Marlon gets back. Once Humphrey's back and shows he's healthy, you'd like to think out of all those names, someone will emerge to be a solid, outside corner opposite of him. But it's certainly a position of concern, and especially when you couple it with the pass rush and the questions there. Tyus Bowser out until at least week five now. So, is Oweh finally going to step forward? We mentioned Ajabo. Jadeveon Clowney. I like the value signing, but at the same time, he's also coming off a two sack season. Like, what are you going to get from him at age 30? I mean, it's a fair question. It doesn't mean he's going to be bad. Doesn't mean, I certainly don't expect him to be a 13 sack kind of guy, because he's rarely been that guy anywhere in his career. He's never lived up to number one overall, but how solid can he be for you? So, when you look at corner and the pass rush, I can live with having concerns with one of those, but right now, we have to admit there are concerns about both those areas right now. So that's where I say, you know what? They need Marcus Williams and Kyle Hamilton to be great at the safety position. They need Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen to shut down the intermediate middle portion of the field. And they're going to have to, they're going to need their defensive line, Justin Madubuike and Broderick Washington and Michael Pierce, Travis Jones, to play at a really high level, because you've got some question right now as far as where is the pass rush coming from, and cornerback play. You don't need, it's not going to be Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters from 4 years ago, but it needs to at least be, can they get high floor kind of play from these guys? Just don't get beat deep, and I think Mike McDonald will protect those guys as much as they can. I expect you're going to see the Ravens playing a lot of zone early in the season, and I think that's just going to be out of necessity.
No, I like Mike McDonald's scheme a lot better than the Winks. I mean, Wink used to leave corners on islands, and with these speedy receivers these days, I think we're just asking for trouble. Hard to cover those guys one on one. So I do like I'd rather bleed in paper cuts rather than have these guys just score in 70 and 80 chunk plays. But with that said, I didn't like what Jadeveon Clowney, when I interviewed him, and he was talking about Myles Garrett and how the team would line him up against the other team's worst offensive tackle. Well, yeah, that's called strategy. I would have done the same thing. So he was complaining about going up against the other team's best tackle. But yeah, you wouldn't put your worst up against their worst. I think it doesn't make sense. But it's nice to see him have a good attitude. And the team chemistry seems to be very good right now, Luke. They're loose. Everybody's paid. Lamar's paid. J.K. Dobbins, look, he's practicing. Patrick Queen is there, quiet, just making plays, etc. So they're cutting it up. I saw the Zay Flowers revelation of a signing bonus and Odell Beckham's reaction to it. So this team, as they head to the opener, at least they seem to be loose, confident, and relatively healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can ask for much better than that. I mean, they've also been, there have been times this time of year where you've already lost a couple guys for the season, and you're dealing with some of that, or you're dealing with the Lamar Jackson contract drama as they were last year and even the year before that to a degree. So, from that standpoint, look, it's easy to feel good when you haven't played any games yet, right? I mean, every team, not every team, let's say, but a lot of teams around the league, even teams that aren't going to be very good, are feeling better about themselves right now than they will even come 4-15 on week one, right? After they've lost their first game. But you're right. I think where the Ravens stand now, even with acknowledging some concern at corner and with the pass rush, even acknowledging some unknown with this offense. I mean, it looks good on paper, but until you go out and actually see what it looks like. We've talked about it. I mean, you and I have talked about this for the better part of a couple years. in terms of Lamar Jackson and the Greg Roman offense? You know, is it the chicken or the egg? Was it Lamar being held back by that offense, or was that offense augmenting what Lamar does best and kind of hiding and mitigating the things he doesn't do as well? We're going to find out. And that's a good thing.
We are.
Right? That's a good thing. So, you know, everyone talks about the high ceiling, and look, this offense has a higher ceiling than it's had over the last few years. There's no question about that. I mean, that's the Captain Obvious statement. But I will continue to go back, because I also think it's patently unfair to just make Greg Roman the bad guy over this offense. And I'm not suggesting you, Dennis, but, you know, just the way you hear fans and people talk about the Ravens offense the last few years, that Greg Roman offense also had a really high floor too. And, you know, that running game was in your pocket, that you knew you could run for $150, 200 yards every single week. And that's going to win you a heck of a lot of football games over the course of a season. However, it's all about January for this team, getting back to the playoffs, and not just getting there, but having your absolute best shot to play deep into January and get to a Super Bowl, at least get to an AFC championship game for the first time in over a decade. So long way to go between now and then, of course, and health is a big part of that, beginning with number eight himself. You know, all this talk about Tyler Huntley or Josh Johnson, which, you know, we've talked about because it was one of the training camp battles. I'm hoping we don't have to utter their name again the rest of the year, because if that's the case, then that means Lamar Jackson's on the field every week. It begins with Jackson's health. You know, that's paramount. You know, we can talk about Todd Monken or Odell Beckham or Zay Flowers until we're blue in the face. If Lamar Jackson's missing games in December and January again, this team's not going, you know, they're going nowhere. So, but that said, there is a lot of excitement to see what this is going to look like. And I think at this point in time, there are no more excuses for Lamar Jackson or anyone on this offense. You know, Lamar, yeah, he's the quarterback, and he's the highest paid player on the team, and he's a superstar. So, yeah, the spotlight is going to be on him, but everything should be in place now for this offense to be its absolute best version of itself. And we'll see what that looks like exactly. You know, is it going to be wide open, chucking the ball 50 times a game? I don't think it's going to be that extreme, but they are going to throw the ball more than they have in the past. And you hope, because of the weapons they have, and let's not forget about Mark Andrews, who I'll continue to say is still their number one, true number one receiver until proven otherwise, because that's how good of a player he is and how special the rapport he has with Lamar Jackson is. But they've got a lot of weapons, a lot of talent. And you know, they say it a lot, and this has become cliche because it feels like one of the talking points that just has been beaten into the ground. But you know, they've said the sky's the limit for this offense. I mean, you know, they have a much higher ceiling than they've ever had under Greg Roman because of the pass catching talent that they have on this roster now on paper. So got to stay healthy, and they've got to go out and do it. And we'll get our first glimpse of that here in just over a week when they kick off against the Houston Texans.
Over the weekend, I had the pleasure and privilege of meeting Roquan Smith. I exchanged my number 18 jersey. I didn't tell him it was Elvis Gerbax's jersey. I didn't let him see the back of it. But no, I exchanged my jersey for the number zero. But he was there, really, really just a genuine guy. He took a lot of time with the kids, a bunch of kids that were there too. In fact, one little one said, "Are you any good at football?" And he kind of chuckled at that. That one got me. But what he did for charity, and again, as mean as he is on the field, he's just as nice off the field. It was really nice meeting him.
Yeah, no question about it. And I mean, he's only been around for half a season, so I haven't had too many one-on-one conversations with him. But it was interesting to see him do that jersey exchange, because I asked him at the end of last season, because I'd gotten the question a lot from fans, because, you know, he had number 18, which is not a typical linebacker jersey number. And my goodness, I mean, the jersey numbers we're seeing guys wear now, I mean, all that we used to know is out the window, basically. But he said at the time that he planned to keep number 18 and, you know, wanted to do that for fans who had already bought his jersey. So when I heard he was changing to number zero then in the spring, I was just like, you know what? I mean, Roquan, I you can go back and find the tweet. I tweeted it out even. So for him to do what he did this past weekend, it's a pretty cool move, you know, and it's also a reminder. I tell fans all the time at this point in time, don't buy a rookie rookie's jersey just yet, because how many rookies have we seen? You know, Patrick Queen changed his number, Rashad Bateman changed his number, Marquise Brown changed his number. You know, so you look at the recent first round picks that they've had to change their number, but pretty solid, good move from Roquan Smith. And, you know, we've seen him be very active in the community, and that's what you want to see, quite frankly. I mean, look, not to say that he's not deserving of the big contract that he got. And look, it's ultimately about what you do on the field, but it says something for someone who is not, you know, did not grow up here, wasn't born here, sign that kind of contract. And then, you know, you see how active an individual is becoming in the community. You know, I've seen him, you know, with the jersey thing, I've seen him do some back to school program type things. You know, he had a camp this summer. So really cool to see Roquan Smith involved the way he has. And, you know, everything I just talked about with the pass rush, with the cornerback position, you know, those concerns on defense, you know, you're hoping that Roquan Smith has that Ray Lewis kind of impact. I mean, yes, the 2000 defense was historic, and the 2006 defense was incredible as well. You know, when you look at some of the historical production those specific defenses had, but yeah, you know, there were other defenses during the Ray Lewis era that they had some weak links at different spots, but a player like him, and obviously I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Ed Reed as well. Sure. You know, guys that were force multipliers. You know, I think Roquan Smith is someone the Ravens view, not to say that he's as great as Ray Lewis or as great as Ed Reed, because, you know, who is? I mean, you're talking about guys that are elite Hall of Famers, even, elite of the elite from the Hall of Fame perspective. But I think they feel, and the reason why they gave him a $100 million contract is he's the kind of guy that can bring out the best in not just Patrick Queen, but other players on that defense. So, you know, they're going to need a little bit of that early in the season when you consider, you know, the numbers at outside linebacker and where they are at cornerback right now. So, but yeah, cool move from Roquan Smith. And, you know, I'm in full agreement with you. My interactions that I've had with him to this point in time have been nothing but positive, and it's a really impressive guy.
Well, you know, the one thing about that 2000 defense, and I certainly can't put the 2023 version of it in the same sentence with that defense, but I'm just writing down as I'm talking to you, this defense does have a lot of number one draft picks, just like the offense does. Roquan, you got Owe. Ojabo would have been a number one draft pick had it not been for his injury. Queen, Hamilton, Williams, Humphrey, I may be missing somebody, but that's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Marcus Williams, I think he was a second round pick, wasn't he?
Okay.
But your point is still,
I mean,
and your point is still well.
Right. These aren't old guys either. These guys are, you know, a lot of them with their best football ahead of them. So this is not sure. Saying that, but they should be good. I don't know about great, but this should be a very good defense.
Oh, yeah. And let's be clear. When I'm talking about the pass rush and the cornerback position,
understood.
I'm talking about the difference between being good and a chance to be elite. You know, those positions right now. And again, when Marlon Humphrey comes back, you know, cornerback, if you're in a position then where, hey, the best of Rock Ya-Sin, Ronald Darby and Brandon, you know, Brandon Stevens, I'll just throw him in there for argument's sake. Yeah, you know, one of those guys emerges, then great. You know, then you're in really good shape at corner. But yeah, what I was talking about is, you know, the difference between being a good defense and having a chance to be great. So they're going to be, to your point, there's too much talent on that defense that you know, I don't think they're going to be worse than good. You know, I think they're going to be good. Right. I think it's going to be a matter of what good means, right? You know, right. And part of that is a good defense going up against Cincinnati. You know, that's, you're going to have a long day if you're only good. You know, that's right. How talented that Bengals defense or that Bengals offense is.
And just as one example.
The concerns
remain, Luke, the pass rush and the health of the defensive backfield. Yeah. Really, it's 1A and 1B.
No doubt. And as we've also said, and we were talking about this even when Wink defenses were playing at their best. I mean, Wink had one bad year. During Wink Martindale's tenure, they had one bad year, and that was the year that they were ravaged by injuries too. You know, they didn't have Marcus Peters all year. Marlon Humphrey was done for the year by the end of that year. So, you know, it was just a matter of okay, it's time for a fresh start and all that. But, you know, we still have said what, even if you have what's considered a great defense in this day and age, if you're going up against Kansas City, Buffalo, Cincinnati, you know, forget about, you know, even talking about other talented teams in the AFC that maybe they'll be in that conversation, but just those three, because they've been there the last few years, and specifically Kansas City, but also Buffalo and the Bengals. You can't just have a great defense going up against those teams. What else do you need to have? You need to have an offense that can go punch to punch with those offensive teams. So that's where I think you go back to, really, this comes down to all these questions about the pass rush and their depth at corner right now. If this offense comes out and can be as great as many think they can be, those problems on defense aren't going to feel like a whole lot. You know, okay, maybe they won't be leading the league in scoring defense or yards allowed or sacks or whatever category you want to talk about, but you know, if their offense plays up to its potential, those concerns on defense aren't going to feel like they're that all that important, all that critical to their overall success. So it comes back to, hey, Lamar Jackson, we just gave you a $260 million contract. And Odell Beckham, we gave you $15 million, even though you didn't play last year. And Zay Flowers, we just made you a first overall pick or first round pick. You know, J.K. Dobbins, you want to go out and get paid? You think you're one of the best running backs in the NFL? Do it for 16 or 17 games. You know, go down the list of all those different guys, all that talent on offense. It's time to go out and do it. And if they do that and they play up to their capabilities and Todd Monken truly proves to be the kind of legit upgrade over Greg Roman, you know, specifically in the passing game, you know, from a coaching standpoint, then any issues they have on defense aren't going to feel nearly as important.
Luke, always great stuff. Going to be a great weekend. Orioles baseball leading up to the Ravens opener. Please tell our listeners all the great stuff you do at WNST, Baltimore Positive, your blog, text service, and everything else.
Absolutely. I encourage everyone to follow us on Twitter at WNST. You can follow me personally at Baltimore Luke. Check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. My latest 12 Ravens thoughts, roster breakdown, practice squad additions, Orioles roster additions as we get to September 1st, and the rosters expand by a couple spots. We'll see who gets those spots, but you can check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive text service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. If you are, you got the Ravens notable roster cuts. You will get notable Orioles or Ravens roster additions. Any potential trade the Ravens might make at some point. I mean, not saying that that's imminent, but you never know. It's happened before this time of year. Any significant local sports news sent directly to your mobile device via the WNST Baltimore Positive text service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. And of course, anything throughout the week on AM 1570 with Nestor. Any Ravens players and coaches interviews from Owings Mills. Orioles players and coaches interviews from Oriole Park at Camden Yards. You can check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com.
Luke, always a pleasure having you on, my friend. Keep doing great things. Enjoy the weekend. Hopefully good weather. And we'll come back and we'll talk about the opener, right? That's going to be our big story. In addition to seeing where the Orioles will be positionally speaking against the Rays 1 week from today.
Absolutely. We will have much to talk about. Enjoy your Labor Day weekend, Dennis. Watch some college football. Our last weekend of NFL free weekend for a long time, which is music to the ears of plenty of football fans. So enjoy that and enjoy watching the Orioles out on the West Coast. And we'll reconvene next week and we'll talk about how the Ravens are going to get a win against those mighty Houston Texans.
That's right.
Something like that.
That's right. Slap. Sounds like a plan. There he goes. Luke Jones here, 1570 AM WNST. We'll take a quick break and come back right after this.